across as being a struggle between our instincts and our rational mind. Our rational mind says that the long-term value of this you know, highly processed, you know, sugar, salt, fat is actually negative. But our animal mind says the short-term value is positive. And so we do these things in the short-term that harm us in the long-term. And it's, you know, it's the fodder not just of high-flown books with intelligentsia. It's the fodder of every, you know, red-top tabloid. You know, I couldn't stop eating. I had a gambling problem.
But wait, I have to speak that that's the animal mind. I mean, you know, most animals don't gamble. Animals in the wild, they eat what they need and then they stop. So maybe it's the human mind gone wrong rather
well,
than the animal mind.
The irrational mind. So we think of ourselves as beings who live on this uneasy truce between the rational and the irrational. You know, we talk about our lizard brain reacting and our, you know, our fight or flight instincts and then being overcome by our cool rational minds, and wouldn't it be better if we could make decisions more rationally and so on. Rationality is a virtuous way of conducting yourself rationally. The irrational is pejorative. So I've just read a great book by Jonah Lehrer, who writes popular neuroscience books, about decision-making. And he's part of this new group of popular science books that I think of as Lewin Hookian. Lewin Hook invented the microscope. And there's like a century of science writing that's just things people saw in a microscope without even much analysis. It's just like, I found something else completely odd. Here's a drawing of it. And in the era of the fMRI, the functional magnetic resonance imager, I think we're entering a century of fMRI literature, which is just, I put someone's head in a machine and asked them to choose whether they like black or red licorice, and here's what I found. I put someone's head in a machine and had them think about an extramarital affair, and here's what I found. And what he talks about is the idea that, in fact, when people that suffer an insult to a part of their brain that's right here behind the eye, that's emotional, they lose the ability to make decisions. Because when you ask them, you know, shall we meet on Wednesday or Tuesday, they can give you the rational reasons why Tuesday is good and why Wednesday is good, but they can't distinguish between them. They can't decide among them without an aesthetic, emotional response that isn't back here in the lizard brain. They talk about the brain as a palimpsest. You know, the historic notion of the brain is it's a palimpsest. And here we have the neocortex, the new bark. And as you peel away the layers, you get closer and closer to, you know, the first thing with a spine that crawl out of the sea. And in fact, it's not way down here that these emotions that cause us to be aesthetic and to respond and to function lives. It's right here. It's right here in the new stuff that emerged last. You know, and without it, we're dithering idiots. You know, would you like white sugar in your coffee? Well, sugar is sweet, and I like sweet things, but sweet things are bad for you, and they rot your teeth. And you could do this for 45 minutes, and while your coffee turns to sludge, you know?
Unless you're a scientist stealing the poet's sugar.
Yeah.
but I dispute this thing about, I think we need another language. Having all this menagerie in the neuroscience of our brain is not helpful. It's a bunch of methods, the lizard brain and so on. And I think the animals, people have always used animals to think with about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it might be helpful to have a whole bunch of other things, like quarks. I mean, when they discovered or invented quarks, they then attributed them lots of adjectives, like color and so on, which were not really qualities of these quarks at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quantum physics is an area that's really fascinating to me, because as an engine for writing science fiction stories, it's great because most people, including me, don't understand it very well, don't have a good intuitive grasp, and it's an enormous distracting a carpet that you can sweep a lot of things under in your storytelling. There's a great American kids cartoon called Pinky and the Brain, and it's about these two mice that are always hatching world domination plans, and one of them involves this mouse impersonating an 11-foot-tall, rail-thin country western singer. And his explanation for how he got that way is that it involved a microwave. And they ask him why, and he says, well, no one understands what microwaves do, so they'll all believe it, right? And it works. And the same is true of quantum physics. And so quarks, I think, you know, quarks are, quantum physics is one of those things where I read a great book, popular quantum physics book, and for 10 minutes, I understand it. And then immediately I'm plunged back into Newtonian space. And I think that all these amazing adjectives we apply to quantum physics, like, it's quarks, especially strings and their color, they function anyway to stop us letting them get normal again. They require us to think of to continually remind ourselves that quarks don't work the way that everything that your intuition